go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
All right, Ben, I think we got another interesting one to talk about today.
Yes, Scott, I was just about to say you look very interested.
I am.
It's usually...
Interested or interesting?
Interested.
Oh,
No, I mean, I think you're taking that the wrong way.
Yeah, you've a little sad now.
You know, you've got your thing going on. I think you're a fascinating person.
Sorry.
Actually, this is something I want to go ahead and talk this one out with you. Man, we've gotten a lot of feedback from our podcast on specific models of vehicles.
Yeah, you're right. We have like Model T.
The Mini.
The Mini is another good one. We've done a lot of military vehicle specifics.
Yeah.
We've talked about certain types of cars. We've talked about muscle cars. We've talked about different specific vehicles that, like you said, people get, you know, they kind of perks up their ears. Do we talk about the Tucker? I don't know.
Touched on the Tucker.
I'm going to have to look back because we've had a lot of episodes at this point. You know that?
We have had a lot of episodes. So everybody's listened to most of our episodes.
And it's all right here in the mind. I've got it all trapped up here. I don't know. I don't have a list.
And right here in the heart.
That's right.
For everybody who's listened to all our episodes, thank you guys so much.
Yeah,
we appreciate
it. That's right. That's a lot of time to dedicate to this.
We will try to be funnier.
attempt.
Sorry
if I jumped on here, but... this is kind of a unique one because this is one that is an offspring of another company that has a long, long history.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, of course, you probably looked at the title of the podcast, I would think. But we're talking about the Avanti. And the Avanti it was brought on, I guess, by someone within the Studebaker Corporation from back in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. And it happened really quickly. The Avanti did.
Yes.
And the problem was Studebaker shortly thereafter went away.
Yes. In 1961, right, we're talking about Sherwood Egbert. He was the new guy on the block, by which I mean the president of Studebaker.
Yeah.
But he was the new president.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get more younger car customers, right? Car buyers.
Yeah, that's right. Because I mean, I can show you a picture here of what the Studebakers looked in the 50s. And they had kind of this bullet nose design. They were they were big. I mean, they're cool looking to look back at them. But looking at this compared to what he was aiming for, it just doesn't seem to match up.
And also, you know, if you see that 50s Studebaker, it has kind of a 40s feel to it.
Yeah. You know what? Oh, one good thing that we can mention that maybe people are familiar with this already and they don't even know it.
What's that?
The Muppet movie.
Oh, yeah.
Fozzie Bear drove a Studebaker, like the one I'm talking about. Now, there were a lot of different body styles. He drove one that looks a lot like this Commander that I've got here, a photo of it here anyways. But, yeah, Fozzie Bear drove one of those when they were headed out to, was it California?
Wouldn't that be cool? We just gave people a neat little piece of movie trivia. Now, don't force it in conversation, you guys. Wait until it's on, especially if you have friends who think you don't know diddly about cars.
That's right.
And then when you see the drive, go, oh, I love Studebakers.
And do you know where that car is located right now?
No.
That car is in South Bend, Indiana, in the Studebaker Museum.
That's right. There is a museum.
It's on display.
I really want to go to that museum.
I have it in my hand right now, the brochure. I was just in Indiana not long ago, and I picked up the Studebaker National Museum handout brochure. And it's not mentioned here on this, but I know that the Muppet vehicle is on display in the museum. They've got something like 70 cars. $8 admission. Come on.
Are you kidding?
How can you go wrong? No,
you can't
$8,
beat that with a stick.
$8 for adults, and kids are $5.
I would try to. Do you think I could pass off as a child?
It's open 7 days a week. I'm looking at the thing right now. Yeah, you probably could.
Thanks, man.
Maybe I could push you in a stroller.
Sure. I'll probably have to shave.
Yeah.
My hairy baby and I.
Maybe. That's right. And I'll dare anybody to call my baby ugly.
$3, man. You know, we could probably buy something at the gift shop.
That's right.
But, so the man he contacts, the man he asked for.
Oh, that's right. We're way back there at that.
Sorry. We're still at that point. He asked a fellow named Raymond Lowy, and I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly.
I think that's right.
To help him attract these younger buyers. And as we said, the Studebakers of the time were more of an I don't want to say an old people car.
No, no, it's just a typical sedan that you'd find from back in the day. You know, when it's a taller vehicle, it was huge. They were big cars.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking to today's cars. I mean, I think they were smaller than a lot of the cars that were coming out of Detroit at the time. Mm-hmm. But they were big vehicles compared to what they were looking for. They were looking for something sleek and stylish.
Something sexy.
Yeah, exactly.
Something that, early 20s guy with money to burn would see and say, I want to take my girl out in that.
Exactly. Yep. So. Yep. So he, in, what was it, early 1961, Lowy did a bunch of sketches. And, you can find these sketches. I think they're somewhere online. You can, and they're in a museum somewhere. Mm-hmm. But the idea was that, you know, here's this, this kind of sporty, sexy, a sports car that would come out of Studebaker. And of course, Egbert said, you know, let's do it. This is a good design. Let's do it quickly. And, this is incredible for the time that we're talking about here. Cause we're talking the early 60s. By 1962, early 1962, so that's, a little bit over a year later.
Yeah.
It was ready. The prototype was ready, for debut.
Which is just for anyone who doesn't know how long it takes to take a car from paper to prototype.
It's a lot shorter.
Now it's a lot shorter, but at the time.
In 1962, come on, it took a long, long time because they had, I think they were just starting to do clay modeling thanks to, the idea of Harley Earl in General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of his thing. And, they just realized that, we can do clay modeling a lot faster than we can make a full metal mock-up. So they did that and they made, scale models within a week. I think they had a clay model in 5 weeks of the Avante. And then they had a full-scale, mock-up and a prototype of this thing ready to go just a little over a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm gonna double check this, but I thought in my reading I found that they debuted this thing at the Indianapolis 500. The track during the month of May.
Yeah, I found the same thing.
Okay, I think that was because the pace car that year was a Studebaker Lark. Vehicle for 1962, and I think that's why they brought it out as kind of a we've got our product on display here. By the way, we've got this new Avante that we're coming out with soon. You may want to take a look at this, and here's a sporting crowd that would be interested in such a vehicle.
Do you want to do some timeline stuff, or do you want to talk about what makes the Avante different?
You know what, I do want to do some timeline stuff because the Studebaker history, and that's the beginning part of this.
Yes.
And we'll find out that Studebaker goes away, Avante carries on, which is kind of a unique part of this whole story. That's why this is so intriguing.
You don't see that happen.
No, this just doesn't happen because, when the company, the parent company goes, usually every bit of it goes. It's like, let's say Pontiac went away recently. Now, of course, General Motors owned Pontiac, but let's say that someone decided to continue making the Solstice Roadster, but they didn't. No one's kept that. No one has said, I have an interest in that vehicle. Let's carry it on.
And it's sort of, for a non-car analogy, it's sort of like Coca-Cola closing and someone else going, you know what? I will just make Sprite.
Yep, that's right. They're like, I like Sprite so much, I'm going to buy the rights to make Sprite.
And all we're going to make
we're just going to make
Sprite.
Yep, that's right.
And this is what has happened.
Yeah, exactly.
With
this
the Avante.
The same thing. Now, a lot of the Studebaker history goes way, way back, and I'm going to go through it quickly here.
Let's run it through. I love the timeline.
Believe it or not, Ben, and when you hear this number, don't freak out. We're going to go through it quick.
Okay.
Studebaker history timeline starts back in like 1730s.
I'm freaking out.
The 1730s.
I'm freaking out.
That's when the members of the Studebaker family, which was something else, it was changed to Studebaker, arrived from Germany in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And the strange thing about this is that, it goes from way back then, and you would think like, okay, well, that's just the arrival of family. Nothing's going to really happen until the early 1900s, right?
Sure.
Not the case. Studebaker built Conestoga wagons back in the day when, pre-car days.
No way. Oregon Trail.
Yeah, that's right. They
built
a lot of the vehicles that, people used to head out west for the gold rush. And they supplied wagons for the Union soldiers in the Civil War. Later they worked on cars. We'll get through this as we go through. In 1831, the town of South Bend, Indiana was formed, right?
Mm.
So this is the founding of the country.
Studebaker predates.
Exactly. Predates the city that it calls home. So in 1852, they actually opened the brothers, Henry and Clem Studebaker.
The Studebros?
Yeah, that's right. There were actually many other brothers. There were five brothers, five daughters, et cetera. They opened up a blacksmith shop, and they built their first vehicle, which is a farm wagon. Mm-hmm. So this is like 1850, right? By 1853, one of the Studebaker brothers headed out to California to strike it rich, and he had something like 50 cents in his pocket when he went out west. Now, can you imagine doing that today? That's, well, the equivalent, you know, $10 or whatever right. it would be. I don't know. But didn't find any work doing that. So he came back, they start creating these wagons. And they open up a dealership for wagons in, let's see, where was this? In Goshen, Indiana. So it was not in South Bend yet. But this is in 1857, Ben. They start selling their wagons in 1857.
Wow.
So this company has an incredibly long history. Mm-hmm. In 1858, the guy that went out west comes back. He has $8,000 now at this point because he had made money working on the tools of the gold rushers, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, the wheelbarrows, pickaxes, things like that, because he had these blacksmith skills, learned what to do, and made pretty good amount of money for that time. Invested in the company, and they start this Studebaker family business of making wagons. And so they started supplying wagons for the Union Army in 1862. In 1877, now that's a long time ago. 1877.
Yes.
Annual sales exceeded $1 million in 1877.
What? $1 million 19th century dollars?
$1 million in 1877.
Wow.
So you can imagine what that would be worth today. That's a huge company in its day.
I mean, you could Scrooge McDuck with that much money.
That's
you could swim through it.
That's exactly right. That's a lot of money in 1877.
Yeah.
Now, in 1878, the wagons were exhibited and won, you know, worldwide awards at the Paris Exposition.
Yes, yes.
1888. This is a good time of period for them.
Mm-hmm.
President Benjamin Harrison ordered Studebakers for the White House.
The presidential wagon?
The presidential wagons. Yeah, the carriages, you know, the carriages that he would use. So probably a lot more stately than what we're talking about.
I imagine.
Not farm wagons.
I was assuming.
Now, here's where we get to the motorized part of this. In 1896, this is the very dawn of what we call the modern automotive era, where this is when you got the Mercedes is messing around with the first combustion engines and, you know, mm-hmm. et cetera. Studebaker starts experimenting with powered vehicles in 1896. So they're right on the forefront of all
quick.
This, right? Yeah, they're quick on it. And by 1902, the first Studebaker we call a car, was an electric vehicle. 1902.
I did not know that.
Didn't see that coming.
I did not see that coming.
Yep. So this first Studebaker automobile was an electric car, all electric. And that if you remember, we've talked about that in the past, that
sure.
electric cars were at one time everywhere. They were far more popular to have or more prevalent than the gasoline-powered vehicles at the time. Now, we know the story behind what happened there.
All right.
So they started, but they didn't start gasoline power production until 1904. So again, still very, very early on in the game, 1904. By 1920, they quit making horse-drawn vehicles altogether. And that's when they were just making automobiles.
Okay.
So 1920, we're getting into the modern era of automobiles here.
And the 1920s, just on a personal opinion note, the Studebakers that came out, I think, in the 20s were some of my favorites.
Really?
I could never own one.
Well, the 1920s cars are beautiful.
It's impractical to own one. They're so big.
Yeah,
so.
They're gorgeous, though. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, beautiful.
And to go along with that, in the late 1920s, they bought they acquired the manufacturer Pierce Arrow. And if you know anything about Pierce Arrow cars, they're these extremely stately looking limousine type
vehicles.
They're
iconic, yeah.
They're beautiful, beautiful cars. Mm-hmm. And you'll see them at concours shows now.
Sure.
A lot of people collect Pierce Arrow vehicles and, it's really, really, I don't know, just gorgeous cars. But in 1939, so we're getting into the war years, they start, supplying the Allies with equipment for World War II. Okay. Mm-hmm. And first they came up with trucks and airplane engines, and they had something called a Weasel personnel carrier that they had. It looked like a lot like a tank. So if you look up the Studebaker Weasel, you'll find some information about that. Kind of a unique name to it. I thought it was kind of interesting that they did that even. And then after the war, you know, it's in 1945. And this is pretty key here. Life magazine did a 10-page spread on Studebaker because they were the first car company to produce a post-war automobile. I didn't know that.
That's wild.
You know how everybody suspended production during the war years? In 1946, Studebaker fired up production again. They were the first one to produce a post-war automobile.
That's surprising.
Yeah, it is. It kind of is. I just have never heard that little fact, in any of this history. So thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, here's where we get to the Avante. So as you see, that's a long, long history going way, way back.
Yeah.
In 1962, here it is. The Avante was introduced at the Indianapolis 500. Remember, the pace car was a Lark, a 1962 Lark. That same year, the Avante that we're talking about, and if you haven't seen a photo of this, take a look online. Just do a keyword search on Google, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
It set 29 stock car records at the Bonneville Salt Flats that year. 29 records, speed records.
I think it's safe to say that a lot of other car companies did not see this coming.
No. This is now the world's fastest production car, the Studebaker Avante. If you can believe that. I mean, when you look at it, you would never guess that today. But back then, you got to remember what this looks like compared to, again, look back in their product line.
Yes.
Where it's coming from, and you'll be shocked to see the difference in design.
And a lot of that is due to the team that they have engineering this vehicle.
Exactly. So. And they did have a good team of engineers working on the vehicle. You mentioned the names. But here's the problem. 1963, things started going a little bit wrong for Studebaker. I don't know exactly what was happening there. We're not really getting into that today. But the automobile operations in South Bend, their headquarters, were shut down in 1963. Now, this is just 1 year after they come out with this fantastic new design. And, they actually made quite a few vehicles. I got production numbers somewhere here, but they made something like, 4,600 or something like that up to that point. Maybe even a few more at that point.
They had built like 20 a day for a while.
Oh, not bad. Not bad. Cause these are, handmade crafted vehicles, well-crafted vehicles. It's tough to get them through at this point. Here's where a little bit of a twist comes in.
Yes.
And do you want to take this where
are we talking about 1964?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. this is really interesting in the history of the vehicle because this is a real pivotal point. This could have gone either way.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong on this, Scott. And it's very nice of you to toss this one my way because I love a good hero story, a good last minute, 11th hour redemption. A fellow named Nathan Altman and his buddy, Leo Newman, they had a dealership in South Bend, Indiana. And Altman, after you have a dealership in the hometown of this company, Altman was understandably distressed about Studebaker.
Sure, he's tied to the company.
Yeah.
He loves Studebaker.
Right. On a personal as well as a professional level. I think that is the pivotal moment here. I think that's what inspired him to say, not only is Studebaker dying, but I can't let them lose the Avante. He's like, I can't let the world lose this car. And he believes it so much that in July of 1964, he purchases all the rights, all the equipment, all the leftover parts to the Avantes, and then gets the assembly plant, the tooling, the body production, and the car was made of fiberglass at that time, which I think is –
One interesting thing is that in trying to get financing for this, he went to some of the Detroit companies. He went to AMC.
He went
to Checker Cab Company and tried to get funding to help him out with this thing.
What did they say?
And they said no. They said even AMC didn't take it. I'm sorry, AM General. AM General didn't take it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And because Avante Motor Company is later called AMC. That's confusing later. But AM General didn't want the car. Checker Cab Company, the owner of Checker Cab Company, who makes those, the car that looks like from the 1950s that was built until seemed like into the 2000s.
Sure.
That never changed in design. Yeah. Kind of a neat design. He said, why would I ever want to buy rights to build such an ugly car?
Oh.
He just outright said the Avante was an ugly car and said he did not want to be any part of it. So, that's when Altman and Newman got together and they decided to buy it, like you mentioned.
And including
six buildings.
Yeah, so they went all in, basically. I mean, it's difficult to emphasize how much of a crazed gamble it is to buy a line of a vehicle from a failing car company.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this company is going under.
On your own, you know?
I know. It's amazing. This is just an incredible story. Why would he do that? He really believed in it.
He was a man on a mission.
He truly did believe in it.
And here you go. We've got some good news with that because he ends up getting the parts that he can and working on with a very few modifications.
Mm-hmm.
He and Newman start building Avantes.
Well, the Avante 2.
The Avante 2, yes.
Yeah, they call it the Avante 2 because it's not the Studebaker Avante from the first 2 years of production, which were 62 and 63.
Right. They actually used Chevy engines.
There was a year off there where there was no production. Mm-hmm. And in 65, that's when Newman and Altman began producing the Avante 2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they actually were building more Avantes than Studebaker was originally.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I think we said earlier Studebaker built 20 a day.
Something like that. Yeah.
They started out of the gate building 45.
Wow.
So they really believed in this.
Wow.
And you have to wonder what's between the lines there. Was it to the point where they were like, we have to sell this many?
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, I also read somewhere that said that they were selling every car they could build. It was such a hot commodity at the time. Mm-hmm. People really wanted this car. It wasn't something, and you know, maybe the rest of the Studebaker line was failing at that point. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you can sell as many cars as you make, it seems like you'd be doing all right.
Yeah. That was the gamble they took. You wanna go to the next chapter?
Sure. Yeah. No problem. We've got again, this just goes back to our timeline here, but
yeah.
Let's see. You know, it wasn't until, you know, Studebaker had to round out production because they had leftover parts and, you know, they I'm sure it was contract deals and things
sure,
happening.
Sure, yeah.
So the final Studebaker didn't actually roll off the line until 1966, and that was in Hamilton, Ontario, because they had production facilities all over the U.S., actually worldwide at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But the final one was built in Hamilton, Ontario in 66. And that car is also on display in the Studebaker Museum.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've got some interesting bits of history there as
yeah.
well. All right. So anyways, that's another sidebar. In 1982. So, you know what? Let's talk about this here because I'm going to go by Avante production years.
Cool.
Because if we're talking about Leo Newman and Nathan Altman.
Yes.
They actually ran the, you know, in some form or another. I don't remember how this all pans out, who's in charge, you know, what's mm-hmm. what's going on these years. But from 1965 all the way until 1983,
yes,
that was when the Avante 2 was produced. That's a long production run for
selling
a vehicle.
Like hotcakes,
that
apparently.
Is a long, long yeah. production run from 65 all the way until 83.
Mm-hmm.
That is when, and I'm going back and forth between two different sources here, but when Stephen Blake purchased the rights to build Avante Motors, or
yes.
purchased the rights for Avante Motors.
Yes.
To build the car.
And he had big plans.
He did. Stephen Blake did.
Are we going into it?
Yeah, please.
Oh, okay, okay. I was giving you the look like, is this, should I do
no,
this?
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
Okay, so, yes, Stephen Blake, round about October 1982, he wants to make the Avante, much more prominent.
Mm-hmm.
So he hits the auto show circuit and he brings the vehicle there, you know, to Washington, to LA, etc. He didn't want to mess with the car's design too much because mm-hmm. he's a don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Well, at that time, it's iconic.
Yes, exactly. But he did want to make it look, the way they phrase it on one of my sources, theavante.com, is that he wanted to make it look more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we see some of the contoured bumpers come in.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we see actually a limited edition.
Yeah.
In 84, right?
80. Well, actually, there may have been that, but there was also a 20th anniversary edition.
There's a 20th anniversary
in edition. 83.
Okay. Okay.
So that's probably what he was shopping around.
That's probably what he brought out first, yeah.
I would think so, yeah. And that's got to get some attention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here you got a car that's been produced for 20 years, and people
yeah.
are familiar with it because, you know, they're on the roads. They're not well hidden. A lot of people own them. And, mm-hmm. you know, later I want to tell you about a list of celebrities.
Yes.
That have owned this thing.
Yes. So that Blake is officially our take three at bringing the Avante back. He was advertised as the savior of this vehicle. Unfortunately, his plans came to naught.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some issues.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, there were some issues.
Yeah. So in 86, Avante is again bankrupt and at the hands of Blake. Mm-hmm. So he sells, or the assets are purchased by one Mr. Michael Kelly. And Kelly took over production for really only 3 years, 86 to 1988. And really, again, the production numbers for those years, somewhat low, I'm going to say, because it looked like there was only about 350 maybe produced.
Wow.
A lot of those were convertibles at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But in those 3 years, then Kelly moved the production to Youngstown, Ohio. And then he sold his share of Avante to a partner, the partner that he had gone in with, John Cafaro, I think is his name. Is that the right way to say that?
Yeah, well, I'll go with that.
Cafaro, Cafaro.
You say Cafaro, and then I'll say Cafaro,
yeah.
And we'll just cover our bases.
That's right. And then under the same, well, under Cafaro, or whichever one I was going to say, he ran it from 89 to 91, and it looks like only about 300 vehicles were made in that 3 year period.
But he was doing that on purpose because he wanted it to be sort of a hard to find, very luxurious.
I see. Vehicle. Create a demand for the vehicle.
Yes. Yeah.
I see. Hold back on production, create a demand.
Yeah. Make it the Mercedes Benz, the Jaguar, the BMW.
And you know what? That may be where the price went up too, because, I was looking at what a 1991 the base price of a 1991 Avante, $66,000, Ben.
That's
$66,000 in 1991.
Wow.
I know. And back in 63, now, of course, you know, the inflation, you know, and all
you have to
account for. But it was about $6,500 in 1963, which I think was still expensive at the time.
So they're building a premium on there pretty
quickly. Exactly, yeah. But 66 in 1991, that was a big chunk of change.
Yeah.
So I can understand what's going on here. He's, like you said, holding back production, boosting demand, and therefore price.
Yes.
Becoming a little more exclusive. So I guess there was an effort to reorganize the corporation, and that didn't go so well in 91. So from 1991, that's where we begin this big, long, dry period where there were no Avantes produced. Actually, if you want to, 91, there were 7 cars produced, according to records.
Wow, that's just depressing.
And in 92, from 92 all the way until the year 2000, production numbers remain at zero. So it's just inactive, just sitting out there waiting for something to happen, okay?
But this is not the end of the movie.
No, that's not the end. So in 2000, actually in 2001, Avante Motors was resurrected. And it was produced in, I'm going to say this name, and you tell me if it's right, Villa Rica.
Go for it, man.
Villa Rica, Georgia. Okay?
Yeah.
And it was a restyled Avante. It was based on the Pontiac Trans Am. And I guess, it's not completely redesigned because if you look at it, you still see clearly the original Avante lines to it. But, you know, it's a rework that's admirable.
Is it a gritty reboot?
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to say it. Yeah, but it's a Trans Am, or they call it maybe a formula-based version. And in 2001, there were only something like 54 of these things produced.
Wow.
So production goes way down at this point, and it remains kind of low in the low 80s, even down to 46, I think, in one year.
They're not breaking triple digits.
No, exactly. And in 2005, they switched it over to be a Mustang GT-based vehicle in Villa Rica. Now, okay, so here we're getting to the end here.
I just want to point out that the person who saved Avante at that time in 2000, a returning guy, Michael Kelly. Michael
Really?
Kelly came back.
Really?
Yeah, he came back.
Oh, okay, good.
As chairman in 2000.
Good catch. I didn't even mention that.
But no, that's it.
That's all right. So in 2000, he picks up again with it's the same guy from back in when was it?
86. The new Avante Motor.
So the same guy repurchases the company again, I guess. And all right. So in 2005, now remember I mentioned in 2004, they have this next generation Avante that they build on the Mustang GT platform, right?
Yes.
In 2005, There's kind of this mention of a partnership between Avante and Ford, which is great news for Avante, right? Because,
yeah,
you know, to tie themselves to a big, one of the big three automakers.
Mm-hmm.
Great news. Here's the problem. On December 22nd of 2006, Michael Kelly was found guilty of operating a Ponzi scheme that he scammed elderly people out of all of their money. You know, just the typical thing that we hear nowadays of, you know, what happens in these things. We're talking like in the neighborhood of $420 million, something like that. And he had just moved the operation to Cancun, Mexico. So he was going to – you're rubbing your face there because you hadn't heard this part, right?
No, this is
– yeah, this is sad news for Avante because, you know, it was on its way back. Had this partnership with Ford all lined up and things were going well. Unfortunately, you know, there's this Ponzi scheme that the founder is involved in, or the current owner, Michael E. Kelly.
Yeah.
And it, like I said, it's like we're talking $400 million plus in funds that were scammed from elderly people. So he's jailed without bond, and that's effectively the end of the Avante Motors Corporation. Now, he did move operations down to Cancun, and there were cars in production because I have a photo here of –
Really?
Avante's being produced in a factory supposedly in Cancun, Mexico on October 23rd, 2006. Now, that's just 3 months ahead of time when the announcement came that he was involved in this what would you call that? What type of problem is that?
What, a Ponzi scheme?
Yeah, what is that? That's
it's fraud.
Fraud, yeah. So he's involved in fraud. 3 months later, they I mean, of course, all along he has been, but
sure.
Or at a certain point anyways. But
right.
So this is just 3 months ahead of time. But there are cars on the production line that I see here people are working on.
Scott, didn't you go to Cancun earlier this year?
I did.
I'm putting the pieces together.
Yeah,
I got my
right.
eye on
yeah.
you,
yeah, yeah.
Benjamin.
I'm investing in
yeah.
Avante, sure.
Won't even
Haven't
get
you noticed I've been wearing these AMC shirts around?
Yeah, I figured.
Did you wonder what that stood for?
Well, you know, we have AMC's, our movie theaters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. So, you know, earlier I mentioned, you know, there was some exclusivity to these cars at a time in history. And
yes.
Actually, right now, how many Avantes have you ever seen on the road? Have you ever seen one?
None. Not one.
I happen to have seen a lot in Indiana. Because, you know,
makes sense. That makes sense.
That makes sense, sure. Just a couple months ago, I followed one here in Georgia for a time on the way into work. Just, you know, by chance, I was behind this Avante. It had historic plates. I think I tweeted about it that day because it was so unusual. And we have an article on our site that's, you know, I probably recommended it because it was how Avante cars work.
Nice.
And, I thought, well, it's a good tie-in, you know, and it was an interesting car. It looked beautiful. It was a blue car, white interior. Someone was smoking in the driver's
what?
Seat, which
why
I thought was a little weird.
Why would you smoke in a
anyways,
car?
Anyways,
like
it was it was a pristine version. It was an Avante 2, but I had no idea what year it was.
He should buy a smoking car.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Anyway, you know what? Not my car. But so who owns these things?
All right, so there's some celebrity owners throughout the years, and they're listed by year. And it looks like, you know, the latest that they go up to here is about 1988.
Okay.
Okay. And I don't know if that's the year of vehicle. I believe that is. And I think we'll just start out this list with I'll go down the list as on the Avante Owners Club site. You know,
nice.
I think that was something like, you know, where I came from.
Yeah.
Shirley Bassey, that's a singer from England. You probably wouldn't know that one. No?
No, I don't.
Okay. Johnny Carson, you probably know him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Close to the Tonight Show.
Yeah, we used to hang.
That's right. Richard Carpenter, who was part of the singing duo of the Carpenters,
yes,
of course.
Yes.
Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper owns a maybe he's actually sold it by this point, I think.
Mm.
But Alice Cooper owned one. Jimmy Dean from Jimmy Dean Sausage, who is also a popular entertainer in the 1950s. He was an Avante owner. Dick Van Dyke owned one.
Nice.
And his vehicle is in the Peterson Auto Museum in Los Angeles, California. And then there's, Fremont Ellis, who was an American Impressionist painter. And here's a funny thing about this one. The Studebaker and one of his paintings were traded for the 1967 Avante II. So he had one of the original 1963 Studebakers and one of his paintings that he traded for a more modern version of the Avante.
We should start painting.
Kind of interesting.
We should start painting.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Make a lot of money doing that, apparently.
Maybe. Who's
trade
next?
It for cars.
Oh,
Dr. J, Julius Erving.
No way.
Yeah, from the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah. He owned one. Ian Fleming.
Okay.
Yeah, now that says something to me. When I read that one, I here's a guy that rates the James Bond novels. What do you think he's going to drive? An Aston Martin?
I was assuming.
He drove a 1963 Studebaker Avante. Or at least for a time he did anyways. I thought that was kind of cool. Andy Granatelli, who was a test driver, Indy 500 legend, STP pitchman.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have heard the name from the Indy 500.
Yeah, he's Granatelli. That's his daily driver.
Yeah, that's right, maybe.
He's like, this is the slow one.
Al Jardine from the Beach Boys.
All right.
I had a convertible. Red convertible with a tan interior. You can picture that, right?
Yeah.
DeForest Kelly, who was from the original Star Trek.
Yes.
And, interestingly enough, that vehicle appears in one of the scenes in San Francisco from the fourth Star Trek film, The Voyage Home. Just isn't a background. You know, it's on the street.
He's like, I'm just going to park my car
here,
guys.
Well, isn't that kind of cool? I mean, that's kind of cool. Neat to be able to kind of make a...
make a cameo.
Yeah, exactly, cameo. Sandy Koufax from the L.A. Dodgers, pitcher. Michael Landon owned one. I'm getting to the end of my list here, by the way.
Oh, sorry. No.
Michael Landon owned one. Of course, Little House on the Prairie, Bonanza. That car is currently owned by Richard James. Oh, you know what? That doesn't really necessarily mean anything, but I think that's one of the owners in the owners club.
Oh.
So anybody from the owners club probably knows. Oh, hey.
Congratulations.
Yeah, just mentioned James. Richard James there. Let's see. Barry Morrow, who wrote the Rain Man screenplay.
Oh.
Ricky Nelson owned one. Rod Serling owned one.
Oh, my gosh. You know he's my hero.
Yeah, creator of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So you know that guy, right?
Yeah.
I think it's been sold at this point, but Herb Schreiner, he was a 50s TV personality. Unfortunately, he and his wife were actually killed in his Avante in California somewhere in 1970. Anyways.
Well, don't let it in there. Bring it
no,
up.
No, I'm not. Gene Siskel owned one.
There we go.
Frank Sinatra owned one.
Oh.
Frank.
Old Blue Eyes
that's
himself.
That's right. So that's a long list that I just went through there. But it gives you an idea of that, you know, the movers and shakers of the day were mm-hmm. driving around in Avantes, and it had some prestige tied to it.
Yeah.
If you had one, it was a unique vehicle.
Then I think, God, I wish I could see one in real life, you know.
Well, it's easy enough. You can look it up online and find, you know, maybe a local museum that has one or something like that. Because
good call.
They're around. There are an awful lot of them made.
Yes.
There's a good chance that you're going to see one soon.
Yes. These are not mysterious, one-of-a-kind cars.
No, you'll spot them on the road occasionally and in museums.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that about does it for us here.
Yeah, you know, I've got more stuff, but I'm not going to read it because we've just gone way too deep into this thing. Because, you know, there's a list of standard features, optional features that are kind of interesting because it was a little unique. But really, I think people should investigate it on their own because not only I'd like them to see this car and see what it looks like. Because if you do know what it looks like, you can maybe watch for it on the road someday and see if you can spot one. But like I said, they're not all that rare. Kind of fun to watch for.
And if you're sitting around listening to this right now and you're having a hard time walking around your house because of all the piles of money you have and you're wondering, what can I do with all this money? It's a fire hazard at this point.
Try to find one of those Cancun-built cars. They've got to be worth something, right?
Yeah, pick up an Avante. Or perhaps an Avante too, if you could find
one. Oh, yeah, back in the day.
I think there's also a four-door model, briefly.
Hmm.
However, in the meantime, if you have any questions, we highly recommend the article that you mentioned earlier, Scott, How Avante Cars Work, on our website. We also have pretty much anything you would want to know about automotive topics on our same website. If you want to talk to us directly, you should check us out at Twitter. We're entertaining, we're funny, and we're very short. What is it? We don't speak very long on Twitter.
No, it's just it's really short. Just a few characters. I'd say under 140 just to ballpark it.
That was our decision, too.
Yeah.
And then on Facebook, you can find us. You can also check out our blog on the website. And if you have any questions, if you have an Avante story, I'd love to hear from a driver.
If you have an Avante, send in some photos.
Yeah. You can send those to... our grateful attention at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.